seven essence statements. In reviewing these seven, I then began to notice that each of these positive commands of Scripture was contrasted with warnings and countering commands. Every "do this" had a corresponding "don't do that." Now, I know that walking with God and experiencing the reality of Him cannot be reduced to a list of do's and don'ts. However, these clear commands of Scripture have served me well as boundaries and have directed my thoughts to God and living for His glory and pleasure. It is in that spirit that I offer them to you in this book. You might ask, are they really the seven? It would be arrogant to claim that I found the seven. My challenge to you is to take a look at these and see if you can find a better seven, or reduce them to two, as Jesus did when he was asked, what is the greatest commandment? There may be 12. Send me your pass at it after you've tested it for a decade, but anchor them in the Scriptures. Which brings me to the second story I promised you. Box tops and puzzles. Over the period of nearly a dozen years, I had the high privilege of teaching a sixth grade Sunday school class, totaling more than 550 young men and women. To illustrate our need of the Scriptures, I would divide the classes into three groups of 20 to 25 each. They were big classes. I would give each of the three groups a jigsaw puzzle. One group would receive a 1,000-piece puzzle in its original box. Another group would receive a 1,000-piece puzzle, but not in the correct box. Finally, the third group would receive a 1,000-piece puzzle in a paper bag. I would then instruct them not to talk and that they had 7 minutes to put as much of their puzzle together as possible. Every time, the first group would stand up their box top, which displayed what the puzzle should look like, and begin making progress. The second group would look at the box top and attempt to put their puzzle together. After a couple of minutes, they would tell me they'd been tricked and that it wasn't fair. The third group would empty their pieces from the bag and immediately know that they were at a huge disadvantage. After just a few minutes of trying to assemble a few pieces, their despair would take over, and they'd begin tossing puzzle pieces at one another like miniature frisbees. After the time was up, I'd gather the class together and explain what they all knew. The right box top was necessary to put the puzzle together. I then shared with them that God knew we'd need a picture of who He is, what He is like, and how we, as finite creatures, can relate to Him, the infinite Creator. This was why God gave us the Scriptures. The Bible is God's box top that explains Him and life as He designed it to be lived. I went on to explain that since creation, humankind has been ignoring God's box top and has been trying on its own to piece life together. But it never turns out as God intends. This is what I tried to communicate in my commencement address to those university and seminary students. The Bible not only explains who God is, His attributes and character, but it also clearly explains who we are and how God expects us to relate to Him. The longer I live, the more strongly I agree with Mr. Tozer. What we think about God really is the most important thing. And it's not just that other things will matter less in comparison. It's that other things won't matter at all. If we get this one thing wrong, or worse yet, neglect it entirely, life will be essentially meaningless. So if you want a life that matters, your quest for knowing God matters more than anything else. God is not some kind of cosmic killjoy hiding from us. As you'll hear in this book, He wants us to seek Him, to find Him, know Him, and love Him. He puts Himself in our path regularly. Many of the events that we call interruptions, many of the circumstances that we call setbacks, and many of the people that we call difficult are, in reality, God's agents to introduce us to Him. He has strategically positioned them to help us realize